elsewhere. Varte's sense of direction was good, but even the ex-Lucifer Black was struggling to keep his bearings in the warren of Ranos City.
"Are we lost, Varte?"
Sebaton glanced over his shoulder and saw his worried expression mirrored by the thin-looking man behind him. Golak, the tech adept, had railed against leaving the servitors behind them, but Sebaton knew the prey that was hunting them. He suspected Varte did too, and ended Golak's argument at the muzzle of his pistol. The cyborgs would only slow them down. Deployed this way, they might actually prove useful, obfuscating the trail and thus gaining the others vital time on their pursuers.
"Not yet," Varte replied.
He battle-signed to the man alongside him, a mercenary, not ex-army, but as he peeled off into the shadows in response to the ex-Lucifer's command, he was obviously well-versed in a soldier's argo. The other hired gun stayed at the back, behind Golak. Sebaton knew the mercenaries' names, but they were as inconsequential as the mud under his feet, now he had what he'd come for. Even wrapped up in cloth, centuries beneath the earth, it felt warm under his arm, and emitted a very faint resonance that slightly pained him. As soon as Sebaton realized they had been compromised, they fled. His masters would have to wait to learn of his discovery. So far away, in all respects, not merely just space, there was nothing they could do to aid him anyway. Besides, he knew what he had to do. Duugan, one of Varte's men, a lean-muscled pugilist with a handlebar moustache and neck tattoos, had spotted the hunters. He was good, a sniper by trade, but caught only the barest glimpse of the warriors converging on their position. They moved after that, quick and fast. It was Duugan who had peeled off from the main group, running point and scouting ahead to make sure they weren't being encircled. Trio, so named for the bionics that replaced three of the fingers on his right hand, brought up the rear. He was clean-shaven and thinner-faced than Duugan, previous profession unknown. He was also the group's pilot, but then Sebaton had that covered if needed.
"How close, Trio?"
Varte said into the vox. They ditched the rebreathers, Varte and his men switching them for throat mics and comm beads. Up here on the surface, they didn't need the masks. They'd only hamper their senses and ability to communicate. Sebaton had removed his too, but kept it in case it proved useful later.
"Haven't seen anything in the last 11 minutes, sir. Must have slipped them."
"We haven't," said Sebaton. "They're closing on us."
Varte's grim expression hardly inspired confidence.
"I know."
It wasn't a sprint. The streets were too crowded and labyrinthine for that, but the sense of urgency made their flight seem faster. Every shadow held a promise of danger, every doorway or tunnel a freshly imagined terror. Even swaying cables and hanging strips of plastic became potential enemies, transformed by fear and the dark. Though Sebaton did not necessarily consider himself a brave man, certainly not in the same way as a soldier, he was also not so suspicious that he jumped at shadows, but the quiet rising tension was testing his fortitude. It had nearly broken Golak. The thin hunchback man was fading, unable to keep the pace. He was used to his workshop, comfortable with his machines and the isolation of that existence. In this life, physical exercise had been confined to scripting doctrine wafers or light mechanical maintenance. A crook in his spine had developed as a result of constantly stooping over some engine or device. A bad decision, or decisions along the line, had thrust him into Varte's employ and turned him into a man so desperate he had no choice but to step beyond the wreckage of his old life to try and build a new one. Clearly he hadn't envisaged part of that would involve running for his life in a strange city on a world he did not know from an enemy he could not see. He kept grabbing his chest, so much so that Sebaton slowed down in case he suddenly expired.
"Don't be stupid. Just let him fall back. Maybe buy some more time."
"Thrawn,
When did I become this callous? All of his life, or rather lives, Sebaton had done what was necessary to survive. He took what he needed from people and discarded the rest. There was remorse at first, some nightmares even, but that all faded in time, and he had become aware of a void developing within him, a slow hollowing out of his soul. Not literally his soul, of course, as such things were real and could happen, but rather a moral degradation which he didn't know how to reverse. He had become nothing more than a tool used at someone else's bidding, no different to a hammer or a wrench, only more subtle and less obvious. Some would describe him as a weapon.